Hello, good morning, welcome. I am Samuel Trapp, coming to you live from the Lake Ozark Real Estate of the Arts Studio. On this fantabulous, fantastical June 11th day. Where are we today? There's so much going on. I'm having a hard time even putting things together. There was a dude, an Israeli MP, who has a cool little hat that took an electric saw to a school gate in an Arabic town. He's a far-right lawmaker. His name is Zvi Sukot. Sparked chaos in Tuba Zangaria after being denied entry into this facility. He just took a saw to it and cut it apart. Very nice. We have a lot of people commenting on a lot of things. There was a Mira Andreeva tennis player who was telling us that she's a teenage sensation and started thinking about what comes next. Her demons tried to get in her way. And, you know, she spent most of her young career being talked about as the future of women's tennis. And she arrived early at age 19. This Russian girl won Roland Garros, claimed her first Grand Slam title, and moved to the top of the season's points race, all while sounding less like a player overwhelmed by the moment than one trying to understand what comes next. I watched her interview. It was pretty. She's very, very well spoken and was very pragmatic about it. They even asked her about not being able to have a Russian flag there, you know. And, you know, she talked about her inner demons. You know, I told her a little bit about this. It was an interesting interview that she gave, and I liked it. And she has moved to first points in the ranking. And only three Russian women, here's the last question. Before you, only three Russian women managed to win Grand Slam singles titles. Anastasia Myskina, Maria Sharapova, and Svetlana Kuznetsova. Do you feel a connection with... And I remember Maria Sharapova and Svetlana Kuznetsova. Used to watch them play tennis. Tennis is very interesting to watch. But somehow I'm not as interested in it with men. And no, it's not the skirts. there's certainly a benefit to that, too. You know, but the... the fact is that women's tennis is more interesting to me than men's. I don't know why. It just is. And I forget the sisters that, the U.S. sisters that were so freaking awesome that played for the longest time and dominated everything. But I'm very poor with names. But she talked about these three women, and Mira Andreeva said, "I know all three of these women personally. I've watched their matches loads of times, and my mom used to tell me how she used to cheer on Nastya, Masha, and Sveta back in the day. It still feels strange to realize that I'm in the same position as them, but it means the world to me." And she, you know, that's pretty cool. They don't let them bring, you can't show the Russian flag anywhere, you know, in sports these days, which I think is bullshit, pardon my French, but it's just crap. And why are we demonizing an entire people when you really only have trouble with Vladimir Putin and his crowd? You know, it's nonsense. You wouldn't allow that in anywhere else. You can't say because you don't like Martin Luther King, for example, that all black people are demons. You know, that's just BS. It's a stupid argument, just like it's stupid to say that all Russians are horrible just because you think that Vladimir Putin is, you mistakenly think that Vladimir Putin is horrible. He's doing what he wants for his country. I mean, a lot of the world thinks, would you take it the other way around? Donald Trump's an evil asshole. Okay, that therefore means all Americans are the same. No, all of Al McCogan is dead, but only some of the class of dead people are Al McCogan. This is the logistical framing of a proposition. Logic controls. Okay? And there's no logic in the arguments against all Russians are, Vladimir Putin's a bastard, so-and-so's a Russian, therefore he too is a bastard. What? Did you go to logic class? I actually took a logic class in college, Quincy University, Quincy, Illinois, 1984, I think it was. And I was like, man, and you had to analyze propositions like that all day long. And the professor, it was a Catholic college. And so some professor, what was his name? Father Aaron or something like that. I had I think he was in a different class. Doesn't matter. But some priest was teaching the class. And, I'd go up afterward and go, you're talking about this class of dead people in the proposition that you send to us. So the proposition is that, like I said, all of Al McCogan is dead. This class of, Al McCogan is dead. So-and-so is Al McCogan. Therefore, he must be dead. Well, I guess that doesn't really work. And so you have to figure out how your analytical propositions get in there. It was a very fun class, and it gives you, it was on an analytic thinking. You ought to buy some of these on analytic equations, analytic propositions, because it's like the eternal word problem. I always enjoyed word problems in school, and most kids hated them. You got this long paragraph, and at the end, you're supposed to figure out what time the train arrives in Timbuktu. The train left it here. It stopped here, picked up so-and-so, and they give you all this crap that has nothing to do with it, and you got to pull out the stuff that has something to do with it in your question. Those are fun, and they cause you to think. And then you have logic problems. I don't know. You used to buy those logic puzzle books. Have you ever looked at those? And they give you the if-then propositions. You go through them. If you're interested in that kind of thing, buy a damn logic book. But don't listen to the fact that just because you wave a Russian flag means you need to be a bastard or that you're hated. It's bullshit. Bad propositions all the way around. So I don't allow that on this show. Let's talk about Jim for a minute. Jim gets to call up and say, all the other people are, what does he say? What did he call me the other day? Oh, yeah. Everybody else is a bigot on that channel. Therefore, you're a bigot. What? It just makes no sense. If you're going to call up and have a proposition, at least have a logical proposition or be able to back it up. Remember, all of Al McCogan is dead, but only some of the class of dead people are Al McCogan. So there you go. There you have it. And we've talked about the Russian teenage sensation who was not, it plays tennis and was not able to carry the Russian flag, but was very pragmatic about it in her interview. I will let you watch that on your own. You can find it on YouTube. But keep an eye on this 19-year-old Mira Andreeva, because I do believe that is not going to be her only Grand Slam title. That's just her first, and she going to keep on playing. So life is good. Let's keep going here. Where are we going today? I have some things that I wished to discuss today. Let's begin at the beginning, because that's a very fine place to start. When you read, you begin with ABC, and when you sing, if your last name is Trap, you begin with Do, Re, Mi. Isn't that correct, Maria von Trapp? We're going to look at a little bit of a deep sanctions idiocy, because yesterday, this is great. It's new now, a new sanction day for us. The European Union, led by some of the greats in political thinking, oh my God, they're just dumb as boxes of rocks, in my humble opinion. Maybe they should go to Quincy University in Quincy, Illinois, should go to a logic class taught by a professor who's a Catholic priest. Maybe they should go do that to get a little bit more of a basis on their argument, on their sanctions. So we wish to review it. Let's call this show then Sanction Day. 21st package of sanctions and the rituals involved, the religious almost rituals involved in economic warfare. Let us go straight to the source of the wondrous news that the 21st sanctions package is coming, and Russia should take notice. And all the evildoers, you know, remember, Vladimir Putin is Russian, and therefore we must hate all Russians, right? That's your logical leap of today, brought to you by damradio.com/live and Samuel Trapp, live from the Lake Ozark Real Estate of the Art Studio. Please feel free to phone in and stop me at 573-746-8020 should you feel the urge and you have anything logical to say that can be based on a foundation, something that is, you know, truth, or at least the allegation of truth, that you're able to outline your position. I would challenge and love it. You know, maybe somebody like Catherine Hanaway saying whether or not a machine found in one building is therefore and judged to be by Judge Ross in the Eastern District a machine that is illegal, how that possibly equates to any other machine in any other location and inside any other town with any other contract in the state of Missouri. Join me tomorrow on Civic Outlaws from 7 to 8:30 to go through that ridiculous argument. That'll be fun, though. But she'll never call. These people never call. They don't have to justify their positions. They have a very targeted propaganda thing that they get up, spout off their bullet point list, and then leave. Remember, when I was in the Army, this is how you get away with doing nothing in the Army, or in any government service. Okay, what you do is they identify a problem, or you come in and somebody asks you a question. You'd never have to answer with the truth. All you got to do is confuse the issue. So first thing you do is deny everything. Wasn't me. I didn't do it. Number two, you make counter accusations. You know, I think old Sergeant Jim Bob over here in the supply department, I think he has information about it. Nothing clear. Third, be as vague as possible. Vagueness carries the day. This is political success 101 for you. Be as vague as possible. And number four, split. Leave the scene. Get the hell out of there. You know, you confuse them and you baffle them with bullshit and you leave. So the first thing, remember this, is these are keys to being a good politician. Maybe Ike should be in here. I could be teaching Ike how to do this. Number one, deny everything. Number two, make counter accusations. Number three, be as vague as possible. And number four, leave the scene. Deny everything. Counter accusations. Vagueness. Leave. Split. Okay? Those four things. And you can be a successful politician. Okay? They all do it. That's exactly what they do. Watch it. Listen and learn. You know, that is developed over years watching Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton and all the scandal that they live. And you can take anybody there. Marco Rubio. Watch him sit in front of the Senate Committee on Money. Okay, and say, man, justify for us this $1.5 billion that you wish to spend on the military. And he says, that's not true. We're part of that is something else. That's number one, deny everything. Number two, counter accusations. And you know, Iran over here, they're the real problem. And why aren't we studying Iran? And we have a special item, an additional item in the budget of another $200 billion that we're asking for that. And, you know, let's talk about that for a minute. Number three, let's be as vague as possible, because he never does answer the question about what the budget of $1.5 trillion represents. He doesn't have to do that. Number four, he leaves the scene and says, you know, I realize here in the Senate, you only each get 3 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever. I cede back my time to the floor, and I got to go have another appointment with the president. Got another issue. This is exactly what you do. So you're so important that you never have to answer the question. So, and you do the same thing. This is success. And I saw many a sergeant. You become a sergeant major or a first sergeant or a command sergeant major that they got. That's how they moved up the lines. And in officer corps, it's even better. There, silence and disappearance, and you can always blame your sergeant down below. Wasn't me, sir. But let me get with Sergeant Trapp here. I'm sure he might have the answer, and I'll get back with you later. But I got to go. I have an appointment. Got to go to the doctor and get my knee checked because we have the big run tomorrow. And then everything is done. You haven't answered a question. You haven't done a thing. That is politics. That is success in today's government service. Okay. So we're going to talk about sanctions and the success of sanctions and Ursula von der Leyen and Kaya Kallas and these geniuses over there and their attacks on the Russian thing. It's all the same bureaucracy. This is what the bureaucracy that we are talking about today is fantastic. It's all over the planet. It's no longer just your Sergeant Corps in the 522nd Military Intelligence Battalion of the 2nd Armed Division at Fort Hood, Texas, which is where I learned all of these wonderful things. It was a lot of fun. So the 21st package, the ritual of warfare and the denial of anything logical. These are the things we're discussing today. The correction is this. As of the latest official EU Council sanctions timeline, the EU has formally adopted 20 full Russian sanctions packages. The 21st package has been proposed just recently. Last few days, proposed, unveiled. Here's what we're going to do next, people. We got another sanctions package. We're going to beat up on those Russians. And, you know, we hate all Russians. And now we got tennis players winning Grand Slam titles. Oh, geez. What is the world coming to? We're not going to let her carry a flag because that is the sanction. And maybe we should sanction her personally because I'm sure she made a lot of money on that. And therefore, she shouldn't be able to put it in a bank or travel anywhere or do anything. Why? Because she happened to have been born in Russia. And you know what goes on in Russia? Putin's over there. Therefore, all Russians are evil and need to be stopped. Okay? That's what has to happen. This is the logic of the EU sanction crowd. Okay? The council's own page lists the 20th package that just entered into force on April the 23rd of 2026. They haven't updated their website yet. So what is this proposed 21st package of sanctions? Okay. The proposed 21st EU sanction packages, but it's so great. Russian oil revenue. We have to go after Russian oil revenue. We stole $300 billion from them, and we won't let them touch it. We stole the interest, and we say they can't have it until they make reparations to the Ukrainian motherland, because there was no Russian motherland. It's always been Ukraine. Where do you think Kievskaya Rus come from, you morons? Kievskaya Rus came from where? Kiev. The fact that they relocated in the 16th, 17th century over to Moscow doesn't make any difference. And the fact that Ukraine means Ukraine, at the edge, they're on the edge, that means basically frontier would be a good word. They are the frontier of what? The Russian Empire. That's what they are. And so that's how it happened. And so now they claim that instead, you know, and if, it, by the way, that logic doesn't work either. If Kievskaya Rus is the real Rus and they're the Russians, we should be hating them, not the people that ran off to Moscow, right? I don't know. Could be curious. So they're attacking oil revenue by freezing the current oil price cap. Price caps are important so that Russia doesn't benefit from the now much higher prices globally of oil. So the U.S. comes in and blows up Iran, since we're on logic paths and making logical connections. U.S. comes in, blows up Iran, freezes all the stuff. Rubio says, we stopping those Iranians from getting their stuff through our blockade. And they aren't letting anybody out, so therefore nobody's getting through the Straits of Hormuz. International territory. We had that yesterday, which is another logical leap that had no foundation. And now what happened? Oil prices went up. Sam's paying $4.20 a gallon instead of $2.39 a gallon as he was in February. So he's a little bitchy. You know, he's complaining because of this. And that's unfortunate because it's interfering with my right and my ability to complain on a regular, level. And now I have to complain at a higher level. And it's demanding. It's very demanding to complain as much as I do. So let's see. They're also attacking what? Russian banks and financial channels. Like when I went to Belarus and I was in Belarus and I went to check on my bank account in Russia at Sberbank. And I go in there and I said, can I get this in dollars? Can I get, I want to get dollars over here. And knocked over the Trump button. And they couldn't give it to me. And I was like, well, why not? We're in Belarus, by the way. And she goes, I have to give it to you. She couldn't give me rubles either, not Russian rubles. And I was headed to Moscow. And so I was trying to get some Russian rubles for the train and for whatever. And so I was in Sberbank trying to get that and trade my dollars. And they couldn't do it. And they said I'd have to go to whatever other bank, some international bank down the street that I had to go to. And I have a like when you travel in Russia, you have a bank card. You go and you put it. It's like a, I don't know, like a Cash App card. Basically, it's a debit card. You put money on the card, and mine happens to be at Sberbank. And so I go into Sberbank to go get it done and fund my card for my trip, and put a bunch of cash on there. And they couldn't let me. They said I'd have to wait till I got to Moscow, and then they could do whatever they wanted because they were under sanctions in Belarus. And in Europe. So they target, stupidity like this. And this is part of the sanctions. You can't go to this regulatory bullshit. Just like America, just like Civic Outlaws fights every single day, the EU is putting up these. So the long term of what we're talking about here today on this program are diplomatic, but more importantly, bureaucratic, because the EU is nothing but bureaucracy and theft of people's money. Just like here, the bureaucracy, their only goal is to take your money. Okay, that's it. And so here they're talking about targeting Russian oil revenue. And then they're talking Russian banks and financial channels, crypto platforms and crypto transfer channels. So now they're digging into your crypto. And they didn't used to be able to do that. And so I'm very much against this. I would much rather have the free reign worldview of crypto and not this BS where the U.S. gets to come in and regulate people's crypto. That's the way you regulate the world going forward. Instead of the dollar, you regulate the crypto because that's coming. And then the so-called shadow fleet. Now, everybody's heard about the shadow fleet. This is number four. The shadow fleet, they want to talk about tankers and maritime networks. Old Kaya Kallas and Ursula von der Leyen were talking for a long time about this. And they were smiling and happy. Look what we can do. We can go after more ships. We're seizing more ships. And then here we go. And then more trade restrictions. They've included this time in this round. Now they're talking about fish products. You can't buy fish. You can't buy fish, you can't buy metal, you can't buy car parts, you can't buy dual-use materials, drone components, aerospace and defense items, and entities in third countries. Here's the big one. Anything from any entity in a third country accused of helping Russia evade sanctions and control. So the whole thing is bureaucratic control. So the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen presented the package on June the 9th, and she's targeting energy, finance, crypto trade, and for the first time, fish. Reports are that the package will target 90 Russian banks, crypto supply chain routes. The Guardian says that the measures include banning Russian soldiers from entering the EU. So a Russian soldier can no longer enter the EU, which is nuts because Russians have the same rights as everybody else as far as crossing the borders. You know, there's you still have to have a visa in many cases, but they're saying they can't come in at all if you're a Russian soldier. They target banks, crypto, oil trade, fish imports, and now they're blacklisting more people. The blacklist is friggin' huge. The blacklist is so long, it's not even funny. So this is not a single sanction. It's what they're doing with Sanction 21, just like so many others, is they're attempting to close the escape route created in the first 20. So they make this one set of sanctions way back when. What do people do? They avoid them. You know, where there's money, trust me, they're going to find a way. And that's what they do. They find a way to get through and make the same money that they were going to make before. They make a way to do it, and everybody does it. Everybody. And if you are in, we'll get to that in a minute. Let's talk about the oil price cap issue. Why this oil price cap? You might have heard this on the news about, well, we're going to cap the price of oil for Russia at $45 a barrel. They're not going to be able to sell those any Russian oil. If Russia's going to sell it, they're not going to be able to make any money doing it. And then they raised the cap to 60. And a lot of people are saying, look, there's a freaking shortage in the world. Screw it. Pull it. Get rid of this. So the price cap doesn't really mean, because what doesn't mean, that Brussels gets to tell India, China, Turkey, or anybody else that you can't pay Russia more than our price cap, $45 a barrel, $60 a barrel, whatever they say it is. Excuse me, I got a little froggy in the throat. What was I doing eating a frog this morning? I don't know. What am I drinking today? It's not coffee. It is a grape-flavored Propel drink. Zero calories, just so you know. So the EU doesn't have the power to globally tell India, you can't pay Russia more than $45 a barrel. What they do, the EU and the G7, is they control all of the services around the barrel, okay? Shipping lanes. Big one, very big one, maritime insurance, big time insurance. Reinsurance that goes on. You can't pull up to a port in a boat that isn't insured. What if it damages the dock? You can't pull up to any Western thing unless in advance they know you're coming and you've transmitted all your insurance paperwork for everything that is on there and they know where it's coming and whoever has taken that money. And most of the finance and insurance networks have been controlled for generations by Lloyd's of London and their ilk. So you have financing, you have brokeraging, you have flagging services and related services. All of these are controlled by the West. And so what they're doing to sanction people is they're saying, you can't use these other services. You can't pull up to an EU port without having all of these things in place. So the EU rules and EU operators have to provide maritime transport and services for the crude and petroleum products, and they can only do so if the oil is being sold at or below the cap price, okay? So the commission says this mechanism is designed to reduce Russian revenue, but it still keeps the global energy market supplied. So everybody else is getting $100 a barrel in a London port, and they'll still buy Russian oil, but they'll only buy it at $60 a barrel or whatever the price cap is. So the current technical mechanisms come from earlier sanctions. So the EU lowered the crude oil cap from $60 to $47.60 in the 18th package that they did some time ago. We'll get to that in a minute. And then they introduced a dynamic mechanism to keep the cap 15% below the average Ural Mountains crude price during the previous reference period. So on January the 15th, the commission said the new cap, is $44.10 a barrel, effective February 1, 2026. So quarterly, they go back and they look at the crude prices for Ural oil, which Urals are in Russia. And so that's where the oil comes from. It's Ural crude, and the Ural crude is going to be priced at blah, blah, blah. And the futures they control and all that other stuff. So those are the effective prices. So the 21st package, the new one that they're proposing, says that oil prices rose because of the Iranian conflict. But under this dynamic formula that goes up and down, you know, when they choose it, if the Ural prices rise, the cap could go up too. And so that would let Russia receive more money while still work under the Western cap, right? So the EU proposal freezes the cap and current mechanism to stop the automatic increases that they input three packages ago. So the freeze is now going to be around $44, and they'll just freeze it at that price. We'll have no fluctuation because Donald Trump happened to bomb Iran, okay? And Israel, you know, can't forget about BN, Benjamin Netanyahu. So they want to freeze it at the 44 into late 2026 and 2027 and not review the cap on a quarterly basis, because that would allow Russia to make money off the oil inside the EU. So what is the EU saying? Even if the world oil prices rise or spike, Russia doesn't get the upside through EU-controlled shipping and insurance channels. But the practical weakness is what, friends and neighbors? Come on. Come on, come on, tell me. Russia can use non-Western shipping, right? This is the problem. Non-Western insurance, which is growing astronomically. They can use shadow fleet vessels. They can trade in the port. They can transfer the oil to another ship in port or before they get to the port and still get the right amount of money. So they ship it, somebody else unloads, then they come out, they load it back up, and then they go back in. So they come up with clever ways to avoid these sanctions. So it doesn't make, you know, they can have discounted sales, they can barter where they're not selling it, they're just trading it. All right, I'll trade you this ship of whatever for this ship of, silk brought into there because we got to take something back. It'd be something else, you know, whatever they're going to fill the hull of the ship with. But they would barter it instead. Bartering is becoming a big deal again. They're going to either give a discount sale, they use intermediaries, or they'll go to friendly or neutral buyers and avoid the EU. So that doesn't make the EU's price cap meaningless, but it's definitely got great leaks. And the longer the sanctions continue, the more incentive and the greater expertise the Russians and their trade partners have to build permanent non-Western, that's key. The key there is non-Western controlled workarounds. So they figure out how to work around it without using Western stuff. And so what are they doing but kicking themselves right in the shorties, right in the doodads? And they are screwing themselves and their own people for generations. Because trust me, the alternative networks are building. So what the EU cannot easily do, and the US is trying it, Donald Trump has tried it, okay? And it's very, very difficult because you have people like Narendra Modi, Jai Shankar, you have Xi Jinping and his foreign ministry, all these big countries, and everybody else is watching with great interest while this happens in real time. And what they cannot do and have not been able to do with any real certainty is they're quiet about it and they're trying it, you know, but they don't want to acknowledge that we're losing this battle. We being the Western hegemony or the hegemonic globalism crowd is losing this war, okay? They cannot force India or China to stop buying Russian oil unless those buyers are using European or EU-controlled services. It cannot erase Russia's domestic production base. It cannot stop every transaction that routes through huge places like Dubai, Turkey, Central Asia, China, India, or other intermediaries. Now, a lot of those places use Western insurance, Western transport, Western what? But what's happening? Because of all this, they are recognizing new Chinese, new Indian, new Iranian, new Russian insurance structures, services. Everything is now being built to work around sanctions. Takes a while to rebuild all of this, but the damage is going to be eternal because you don't, I mean, it's a long-term play. You know, you have to think long-term. Don't tell me China doesn't think long-term. They do. Don't tell me India doesn't think long-term. They do too. And the only people that we're short-timers, short-term people, are here in the United States, you know. So we ought to have a holiday called Sanction Day here. We ought to make a new federal holiday. Call it Sanction Day. And we can say this is when we've realized that sanctions are really foolish. Diplomacy would be a better option because you're interfering with the economics of the planet, by the way. So when you put this thing in, what you're really doing is disadvantaging your own citizenry all over the place. Because long term, they're developing counterpoints to it. You could argue that if you're a dock worker, what do you care if your paycheck is coming from the docks of New Jersey owned by Jim Bob, or a dock in New Jersey owned by China? What do you care? But the Chinese and the everybody else on the planet are trying to buy buying the infrastructure surrounding all of it just to avoid the sanctions. People don't like this, but most of the time you just don't understand it. And so Sanction Day would be pretty cool if we could create us, and maybe we should call it Anti-Sanction Day, the day we knew the BS Sanctions Day. How about that? We finally realized it. So what we do, what we're very good at, and the EU follows our lead and creates their own packages. US doesn't have the 21st sanctions package. We're a little bit quieter about it. We just have Bessent and his crowd go out and say, you know what we're going to do? He just makes announcements every once in a while just to still be relevant, right? So people are paying attention to him. You know what we're going to do? We're going to go steal all the money in the bank related to Iran. We're taking it all. Okay, so that sounds like, boy, what a great plan. You know, and he'll just come out and shout something out every once in a while and call it a sanctions package. But he doesn't really call it a sanctions package, but it is a sanctions package. So we could work on Sanctions Day. Let's go back to the timeline of the packages. And I don't know if I should go backward or forward. So let's talk about it, because I was theorizing that the sanctions would... The reason we have 21 packages of sanctions, and my anticipation before reviewing it was thinking that if I go back, I'm going to see that the sanctions are speeding up now. Like, didn't we just have the 19th sanctions package back in February and the 20th back in, you know? So I was like, man, seems like we're always talking about the Ursula von der Leyen and her crowd. You know, they've run out of pom poms and they got to go run out and start cheerleading something new. So they just, you know, every 90 days they create a new economic forum somewhere and they get to get up and all congratulate themselves on how they're winning the war against the evil Russian Empire. Right. And here's what we're doing. We're going to put some more sanctions in place. And there you go. But what I found out was it's really not quite so. So they were closer together back in the beginning because they screwed up. They screwed up so bad. They didn't realize how quickly the workarounds were going to come. OK. And so these workarounds are like this. Let's talk about this. Sanctions. On February the 22nd and 23rd, the day, you know, the day the war escalated. The war's been going on since 2014. Ukrainians have been slaughtering Russians in the Donbass since 2014. They've been bombing their own country for years, you know, and killing ethnic Russians and, destroying them. And they were trying to get, work through the scam of the Minsk Accords, one and two. And so the sanctions came up because the Russians pushed back and said, you know what? You guys are assholes. I can't believe you're not going to. They finally stood up. Okay. And so sanctions on the 301st State Duma members, 351. This is what how they started. Personal sanctions against 351 State Duma members who voted to recognize Donetsk and Luhansk. So the ones who didn't vote to recognize Donetsk and Luhansk as Russian, those guys didn't get sanctions. So obviously you're trying to take a new country and they say, well, fine, we're going to sanction all of your accounts in bank accounts in our banks in the West, because all of you travel in the West because you're important people. And so we're taking your money. This is how you get rid of Vladimir Putin. You sanction the personal accounts. So the first ones are very personal in nature. And there was a non-government controlled sanctions against Donetsk and Luhansk. Any restrictions on Russian access to EU capital or financial markets. That was on February 22nd and 23rd. They had individual sanctions against the people who voted to recognize Donetsk and Luhansk because there were referenda there. And so, naturally, we have to sanction these people. How can they go against the globalists? So we sanction them personally, steal their money personally, and they no longer have access to their money, and they better have kept it in Russia, or they're going to lose it. So the personal sanctions happened. On February 25th, they sanctioned Putin himself, Lavrov, Sergei Viktorovich, the State Duma and Security Council members. Now they expanded it to everyone because they didn't immediately go, oh, wait, we made a mistake. Donetsk and Luhansk will stay in Ukraine. They said, no, well, they've done it. So, well, shit, we missed somebody. We didn't sanction Putin, Lavrov. And while we're at it, let's do all the rest of the Duma members and the Security Council members, anybody who works in finance, energy, transport, technology, and they restricted access to all of those networks in the West, any defense sector export controls, and aviation, space, oil refining technology restrictions, and partial visa facilitation suspension. No more visas for anybody from Russia as of February 25th, 2022. So now those visas only come for like 3 years, 10 years, depends on what you get, right? And so they'll be being limited even now because now we're 4 years later and Russians can't leave their homeland. So on 5 days later, the EU airspace was closed to Russian aircraft. The Russian central bank transactions were banned. The seven banks, including Sberbank, my bank, was removed from SWIFT. The Euro banknote ban occurred. The RT Sputnik broadcasting was suspended. You can no longer broadcast your RT or Sputnik. And Belarus-related sanctions, you got to, since Belarus says we support Russia, you got to sanction them too. So these are the sanctions. That happened on February 28th. That was the third sanctions package, basically in a week. Let's see. Then on March 9th of the same year, 160 individuals were sanctioned. They picked all the rich oligarchs, sanctioned them. They sanctioned maritime navigation, radio communication export restrictions. Now Belarus has a SWIFT and central bank restrictions. And Belarus now can't use any financial inflow restrictions, any money coming from there. 6 days later, on March 15, Roman Abramovich and German Kahn was listed. Okay, Roman Abramovich is a big investor guy. I think it was him that they stole his huge yacht. Remember they took his huge yacht that was the size of an office building in New York. I was freaking enormous, and they stole his yacht, if I'm thinking of the right guy. Any state-owned enterprise transaction was banned, Russian state. Any credit rating service was banned. New Russian energy investment, no more Russian energy investment. No more iron or steel imported from Russia, and any luxury goods could no longer be exported to Russia. That was March 15, so we're not even a month in. So April 8th, 217 more individuals, 18 entities. EU ports are closed to Russian vessels, any vessel carrying the Russian flag. Russian road transport ban. You couldn't go if you had a car licensed in Russia, that was licensed in Russia. No more. So trucking was done. Coal and solid fossil fuel imports, wood, cement, seafood, liquor import bans. You can't bring any of those in from Russia. No more jet fuel could be exported to Russia. High-value crypto services were done, and anything in trust restrictions. They couldn't create any Western-style trusts, whether you're Russian or not. Okay, that was April 8th. June the 3rd of 2022, so we're on the sixth package. Here, major oil, where they attacked crude oil, refined product import, ban on reselling pipeline oil to other member states or third countries. So if Hungary was receiving oil from Russia through Ukraine, they couldn't turn around and sell it to Germany. So you can't third party it, you can't swap it, and then play that, you know, have that come out. What else did they do? Third countries. Here's where the insurance and financing restrictions came about for Russian oil transport. Three more Russian banks were removed from SWIFT. Russian broadcasters, total, all of them, not just RT, were taken off. Any accounting, auditing, or consulting services were also terminated. The EU couldn't consult with Russians. July the 21st, package number 7, maintenance and alignment. This wasn't real sanctions. We're just, well, you know, we've been doing this for 6 months now, or four or five months now. We now know what we're supposed to be doing. We forgot these 54 individuals and 10 more entities. The Russian gold was import ban. You couldn't buy Russian gold. You can't talk about asset reporting. You can't report Russian assets. You can't report them anymore. You don't, well, half the time you don't even own them anymore because Russia was busy seizing them. This is when the big deal about Russia taking McDonald's and selling it to other people and it becoming Vkusna Itochka, which is tasty, period. And it's very tasty, actually. It's much better than McDonald's. And their coffee sucks, but everything, you know, you can go to any McDonald's on the planet and get the coffee that tastes the same everywhere, whether they're all required to use the same coffee, which I presume is the case all over the planet. But I mean, nope, all over the United States, because in Russia, the coffee from McDonald's is crap. And you can go right to any little coffee shop. Coffee shops are a big deal in Russia, and there are plenty of them, and very, very tasty. And there you have good coffee. It's very cheap, and you don't have to go to Starbucks. And even at Starbucks, it wasn't horrible to pay, you know. Now it's Star Coffee over there, so that happened too. And all this was going on in mid-July, or mid 2022, and here we are in July 22 with the seventh sanctions. They port access. You couldn't go into locks anymore around the world. No more locks for the raising and lowering of your ship, and you couldn't have dual use controls. And you had clarifications and exemptions were fixed up in the seventh package. The eighth package was a whole October of 2022, so we're still in the first year. There's a price cap framework for maritime transport of Russian oil to third countries. This is one we're talking about again today in the 21st package, okay? Sanctions and circumventions listing criteria, Russian maritime shipping register transactions ban, bans on imports of steel, paper, plastic, cosmetics, crypto wallet restrictions, service bans of architecture, engineering, and IT consulting, as well as legal services. You can now not get lawyers. No more lawyers. So lawyers were being sanctioned away from, well, you couldn't have a Russian come to your office and hire you because sanctions say that's not allowed, okay? December. We're still in 2022. We're not even a year in. 141 more individuals, 49 more entities, 168 defense industrial entities from Russia, aviation, space, and drone engine export bans, mining investment bans, Russian Regional Development Bank transaction ban. So this one's important. The Russian Regional Development Bank. This is when the development bank became the BRICS Development Bank. And it's not BRICS. It's called the International Development Bank, to create something different than the World Bank for its members. And so this was a big mistake, in my view, back then. Because now you've expanded it to non-Russia. You know, you're no longer, this is when it started to go off the rails, you know. Now we're not sanctioning Russia, we're sanctioning the world, okay, is what's happening. And now we're a full year in, and the 10th package, EU package, came on February the 25th, 2023, a year and 3 days after the war, or a year and 1 day, maybe two, I don't remember. I can't remember if it's 24th or 22nd. I think it was February 22nd the war started. 87 more individuals, 34 more entities. Now Iran is going to be added to the deal because the Iranian drone-related, you know, the Shahid drone manufactured in Iran, sold across the border into Russia and used to bomb Ukraine. And the Russians were taking those, upgrading them, and using them to bomb Ukraine. And the Shahid drone and the other drone that they which I can't remember over there, Russia has now repurposed them, reinvented them, as it were, and sent it across. We're going to take a bit of a break. We're halfway through the show, and we're at the 10th sanctions package. We still got 11 more to go. To get there, but I'm going to play for you a Ruski song, Ruskaya Pesnya, and the Russian song is Adrugya, Ilya Adrujba, about a song about a friend, Song About a Friend by the old Vladimir Vysotsky. And I went to his a museum dedicated to him in Nabrezhny Chelny in 2023, 2024, can't remember. But I've been over to Nabrezhny Chelny several times. That was the first time I discovered that they had a Vysotsky. Now, this is true Russian, you want protest singing. These are our protest songs, you know, your Bob Dylan and crowd from when they were kids. You know, he had the rain on a tin roof, sounds like a drum, that kind of stuff. We're marching for freedom today, yay. I'll sing one for you. You know, but we're going to go with the old Vladimir Vysotsky and play you a song of a friend. It's only a couple minutes, so please enjoy. Hold on, let's make sure it's going to play. Somebody was dinking around with the sound again. Whoever's before me, stop doing that. It's freaking irritating. And that was Vladimir Vysotsky. Song came out in, geez, late 60s, early 70s, probably, that song came out. Pretty good stuff, Maynard. and basically, the Song of a Friend is really a philosophical song. Very nice. And what it is it's talking about friendship and how you can tell that a friend is yours. Very, very popular. Now, Vladimir Vysotsky was not very well liked by the government back then because, remember, you had to be accepted into schools and you had to be politically correct way back then. Soviet Union was certainly not fond of this guy creating narratives and the popularity that he was garnering, and they tried to limit his influence on people, and it didn't work. He gave an interview. I talked about this way before, in many years ago. Who was it with? Was it Dan Rather? I can't remember who interviewed him when he came over, and they tried to get him to talk bad about Russia, and he wouldn't, or about the Soviet Union, and he wouldn't do it. He said, "I'm not here for that," and he was very. It was a good deal. It was a pretty good interview, and the song anyway is a good song as well. Let us see. Okay. All right, we're going to try this, but I do want to get to my discussion on sanctions, so I'd rather not hear a different topic. And there's something going on with your phone. What do you got? I don't know. I guess he's got nothing. Okay, well, I was going to have a conversation, but apparently that's not going to happen. So... at any rate, back to our sanctions discussion, which we were going through earlier, and we were on package number 10. Then they didn't have another package of sanctions until June of that year. I mean, a whole 4 months later, they had some more. There were 71 individuals, 33 entities, and 87 defense industrial entities, more export restrictions, more transit bans, more road transport restrictions, more port and lock bans for vessels using ship-to-ship transfer. They were discovering some year and several months later that they were ship-to-ship transferring stuff outside of the port and then bringing it in. So you could go out. This is one of the ways of avoidance. Meanwhile, they're building all this new infrastructure for other ports and other countries and using different acceptables. And so what's the EU do? They block off anybody that has insurance from other places, say, nope, you have to be insured by Lloyd's London, you can't do it. And then, you know, Lloyd's wouldn't certify that you had proper insurance paperwork or restraint, so they would limit you from coming in. And so they would disabling navigation. There were more media suspensions, more IP and trade secret restrictions, and then an anti-circumvention cooperation protocol was put into place because they were noticing, year and a half later, reality punched them in the face. And, well, Jesus, these people are avoiding our sanctions. We're a year into this, and by God, they haven't collapsed yet. And so we need more. You know what we need? Sanctions aren't working. You know what we need? More sanctions. You know, my name's Ursula von der Leyen, and I support this message. You know, and my name's Kaya Kallas. My name's Anna Verbach. You know, I have math problems, but you know. We're gonna make a 360 degree turn right here, and we're gonna put more sanctions in place. You know, that's what we're gonna do because we're Anna 360 Verbach, as she is referred to in political terms, because she doesn't turn around, she turns around. You know, that's what she does. And so they implement, year and a half later, an anti-circumvention protocol. Okay. Then in December of 2023, 6 months later, they find out that they have to sanction 61 more people that have been getting around this sanctioning crap, and 86 entities. They're helping these people get around sanctions. We have to sanction them too then. 86 more companies, a diamond ban. Now you got to ban diamonds from Russia. You have an LPG and metal goods import ban. You can't do that. You have a no Russia clause. For re-export contracts, you can't re-export something to Russia. No, no, no. Software services are now banned. Reporting rules for transfers over 100,000 euro were implemented. Why? So that they could bureaucratically track who's avoiding sanctions. And then a larger, much larger anti-sanction circumvention protocol was implemented and this cooperation. So they're still realizing sanctions aren't working. And so they change him yet again. And we're only a year and almost 2 years in. So on the anniversary, February 23rd of 2024, they implement the 13th sanctions package. We're now 2 years in, okay? Now we have 106 individuals, 88 entities. Now North Korea is going to be sanctioned because anything related to North Korea, because North Korea is supporting Russia, sent some soldiers over to Kursk, and they did hadn't that hadn't happened yet, I don't think, but they were getting there in the February part, and they were the Kursk operation hadn't happened yet, but it was coming. Actually, I think came in late 2024, but I don't remember for sure. They sanctioned another 27 defense industrial entities. More drone components were sanctioned. And electrical transformers and industrial goods were also sanctioned. You know, you couldn't do it. Okay, none of that. So now, June 24th of 2024, we're at the 14th package. We're 2 years and 4 or 5 months in. 69 more individuals, 47 more entities. Liquid natural gas now can't be re-exported. New Russian LNG investment ban. So no more LNG anywhere. You know, that's banned if you're using Western insurance or Russian infrastructure. Or I'm sorry, if you're using Western infrastructure at all. That's, you know, you got to get rid of the LNG and helium. No more helium. No more industrial export. You can't do that. Restriction on Russia's financial messaging systems. So Russia has its own SPFS financial messaging system competing with BRICS, or competing with SWIFT, I mean. And they were talking about that. Remember, this is the upcoming Up to the BRICS 2024, which occurred in October 2024 in Kazan. And so they were building, trying to quickly build China's SIPs and Russia's SPFS, the messaging system, and China's SIPs. And these were big developments. They'd been ongoing anyway, but they were finalizing in 2024. And this was going to make it even 10 times more easy to avoid sanctions. Okay. And everybody knew this. So you had to ban the SPFS financial messaging system. They had to ban Russian funding of EU political parties. They do it all the time. The EU funds any anti-Russian. Your only platform, you could be an axe murderer and say, we need to axe murderer anybody who is under 5 feet tall, and you know, they have to be killed. But. I hate Russia. I hate Vladimir Putin. And I guarantee you the EU is going to support your political party and you're going to get all kinds of benefit. But by God, the reverse better not happen. Russia can't finance or fund any candidates that are pro-Russian outside of Russia. Bad plan. We can't do that. But we can fund everything anywhere we want to. Right? But the only requirement is you must be anti-Russia and anti-China, right? So you can't fund a Russian NGO, non-government organization. They're now port and flight, more stuff coming in there, more media suspensions, and guess what? Surprise, surprise, more anti-circumvention tools implemented. We're now 2+ years in. 15th sanctions package came out in December of 2024. 54 more individuals, 30 more entities, 52 specific shadow fleet vessels. Now they're identifying individual vessels that are engaged in offshore transfer to non-Russian ships or whatever. And dual-use exports, restrictions concerning Russian court rulings. So you can't even use a legitimate Russian court judgment anywhere outside of the country under Article 248, which requires observation. and enforcement of foreign judgments, but not anymore. We're done with that. We're the EU, by God. No, but we don't have to follow the law. You know, we went to law school where they didn't teach law. You know, that you missed the law that day. And so you have to do, you know, Article 248, Central Securities Depository Derogations and Divestment Deadline Extensions. They want to take the money from Russia, the $300 billion they've been holding for quite a few years. Now we're at anniversary number 3, February 2025. 48 more individuals, 35 entities, 74 more shadow fleet vessels, transaction restrictions on any institution using Russia's financial messaging system. So obviously now people are still using FPFS and they're still using SIPs. And so we have to sanction them too. No more institutions can use this. 13 more regional banks, export control, Russian media suspension, no more media, port and airport restrictions, and anybody aligned with Belarus. It's now going to be targeted as well. So there we are, third anniversary. Okay. Several months later, 17th package, 17 more individuals, 58 more entities, including Sergutneftgaz. Sergut is, I believe, the German part, and they got rid of the German slash Russian. Russia owned 51% of that, if I remember. And so there were 189 more shadow fleet vessels attacked, dual-use exports, controls, chemical, and machine tool spare parts are now outlawed as well. So it keeps expanding, you know, the next. Then in July of 2025. They lowered the crude oil cap from $60 to $45. Remember that? They import ban on refined petroleum products made from Russian crude in third countries like India. Because they buy all the crude from Russia, they return it into petroleum, and then they ship it out and they say, no, not anymore. They're trying to force India here to not make any money for their own country and to re-export Russian fuel. This was a big debate because they're going, man, you asked us to do this. You told us to do this and said, this is how we get it because you're Europe, you still need all the fuel from Russia and you need all the fuel that comes in from India, even if it's created using Russian. But nope, we got to get out of that. So instead, we're going to pay three times as much getting it from the U.S. or where else, wherever else we can get it around the Straits of Hormuz. And they were buying it from Iran, right? Iran and the UAE and places like that, and having it go around the Straits of Hormuz. So the story just keeps getting worse for these poor bastards. And so they've lowered it to $47. 105 more shadow fleets. Nord Stream transactions. So because one of the pipes is still working. They needed to shut that pipe down because they blew up the other two. Stronger bank transaction bans. They improved that. Said, oh, geez, they're not working. You know, all of these things that I'm telling you are the same first sanctions not working package. The sanctions aren't working, so let's make it worse. You're affecting your own economies worse than you're affecting the Russian exports. So, wait a minute. This isn't working. Aha! We found the result. Let's go back and do something more, right? Russia's direct investment fund. You can't even invest directly into Russia anymore. And no more dual-use export. Well, more dual-use export. Things that can be used for two different things. Electronics. Remember, what was it? The England, they were saying, Russia, all their tanks are being used. They're being supplied with washing machine parts. Remember that? So you got to better restrict those washing machines too, because, you know, those could be used to create Russian tanks. I mean, it's an idiotic argument, but. But that's, you know, what that's the EU for you. This is Ursula von der Leyen and Kaya Kallas, two of the biggest goons on the planet, government lovers, one and all. We love government. Let's go after people. Now let's see. Another ban, October 23rd, 2025, 69 more individuals, 117 more shadows, and 45 new export controls. And now they have diplomatic travel notification rules. So if you're Viktor Orban, you have to tell the EU you're going to Russia. Oh my God, you're going to Russia? We got to stop you. So you have to report it now, or you could be sanctioned yourself inside the EU. And we saw what they did to Orban, right? 20th sanctions package. This is the last one. April the 23rd of 2026, a full 6 months plus since the last sanctions package. April 23, 2026. 120 listings, future maritime services banned for Russian crude and petroleum. Any future stuff, you need future service. We're not giving it to you. 46 more shadow fleet vessels. Tanker sale due diligence. You can't sell a tanker to or from Russia without going through the EU due diligence process. Liquid natural gas tanker and icebreaker service bans. You can't go up through the Arctic anymore. LNG terminal service ban for Russian entities. Transaction bans on 20 more Russian banks and 4 non-EU financial institutions. More crypto restrictions, export restrictions, and circumvention protocols and bureaucracy built in. So you're building an enormous bureaucracy here to track all this stuff, right? And now the 21st one that was unveiled June the 9th hasn't been adopted yet, but it's coming. You know, they'll adopt it. A freeze of Russian oil price cap. Now it can't go up and down like they had it go before to be a percentage of what the international level is. They now include the fish like we were talking about before. These people are nuts. So let's see. The EU has moved from big symbolic sanctions, Putin, Lavrov, oligarchs, SWIFT, airspace, and oil, to now increasingly very technical sanctions against the workaround. Against, of course, people are working around. The 21st package is probably the biggest symbol that sanctions aren't working. It's bigger than anything else. What else do you need to prove that sanctions aren't working? Except a package 22. The more, this is what's going to happen. Shadow fleets, ship-to-ship transport, crypto platforms, third country banking and insurance, re-export works, you know, that they're killing themselves. People are just like with the U.S. We don't want to use your political dollarized structure because, you know, we don't want to be sanctioned too. One day you'll decide some idiot, some unelected goon who's appointed to the EU globalism crowd will just sanction me one day. I'll be on the list to be sanctioned. It doesn't matter if you have money. It matters that you're the political type that needs to be sanctioned. Well, you can't travel to Germany anymore because you are a Vladimir Putin puppet, you know, whatever. And it's the same old, same old. You know, they're moving. They got, you can't get onto SWIFT. Okay, well, let's build our own platform. So what have they done? SIPS is growing dramatically. SIPS is the Chinese payment system. And that Chinese payment system, it doesn't compete on a level of SWIFT yet, but it's quietly growing year by year. They implemented it in, what, 2016, 2017? Very, very small. But now, 98% of Russian Chinese trade goes through SIPS. A lot of BRICS countries are using the SIPS protocols and taking yuan, taking money through that system, and avoiding the dollar. It's happening real time. And it's not going to stop. You know, it's just not. You can't tell China not to do it. They're going, you're not going to put us in your sanctions machine. No way. We'll just build our own. You know, we can withstand you. Russia built their own. We can withstand you too. Long-term pain? But, I mean, long-term gain, short-term, next several years, yeah, you know, sanction package 21, they laugh them off now. I mean, who wouldn't? You know, here it comes again. Well, you know, our workarounds are working, aren't they? Because you're struggling to keep up. And, oh, yeah, this package is going to bring them to their knees. Oh, yeah, just like the last one. You know, we're going to do it. Well, the adaptation of the market is what markets do. I have an economics degree. What do you think happens? Equilibrium. When it's no longer equilibrium, you put a false thing. The market price or the market changes. The market fights to get back to equilibrium. That's economics 101. I mean, if you need to know economics, this. Economics, a supply equals demand. That's the point of equilibrium. Equilibrium works. And what do you do as a regulator? You come in and you cock up the equilibrium. You put in a sanction. You put in a tax. You put in some kind of an outside thing. And guess what you've done? You've destroyed the market and the ability of people outside of you to do what they wish to do. And what are they going to do? They're going to come up with workarounds, and the market will always get back to where the market needs to be, you know, with your influence. And I'm not saying you defeat the sanctions, but the market will adjust. If the product is, as long as the product is something that's necessary and needed, and as long as there's money to be made on it, trust me, they'll keep doing that. And with oil, that is absolutely true. And the sanctions will never work for that reason, because they will always try to find the market price. And the Russians, if they sell their stuff at the market level, you know what that really means? That means that's the surplus. They're getting their highest money. That's your. Have you ever heard I'm trying to remember the legal term for it. Not legal, the economic term for it. It's the point at which you don't want any more. It's a needs-based price, okay? So, and I wish I could remember the term, because it's important here, and I can't remember the term. But but how it works is this. You're sitting at a table, and somebody comes and offers you a small cookie, a chocolate-covered cookie with, something on top, and you're going, oh, my God, that's my favorite type of cookie. Yes, I'd love to have that cookie. And they give you a cookie. Somebody comes up and they give you a second cookie, the same exact one. Oh, my God, I love that cookie, and I'm going to take it. Well, they're going to come up and they offer you a third cookie of this same type, right? Oh, it's fantastic. At some point, you're not going to want any more cookies, okay? And all the rest of those cookies are of less value to you. You might still take them, but you'll save them for later, or let's say you're paying for them. The first one, you'll pay a dollar. The second one, you'll pay a dollar. The third one, you'll pay a dollar. The fourth one, you're going, you know, I don't want any more cookies, but, you know, you give it to me for 75 cents and I'll take it. You know, and it's whatever that legal, the economic term is that I can't remember. It's the price, the filling price, the gap price, the next price, I'll take it. But that's what Europe has made for itself. It's the dumped off goods of the, you know, we'll sell it to you, but we're going to sell you, you know, whatever if it's a lower quality, a lower standard, or we're just selling you our surplus, that means you have extra to sell at that price. And that is your something dollars. I can't remember what it is. Your whatever price that you get. Your fill in the gaps price, basically. And so that's what they're doing right now. And I wish I'll remember the term, I'm sure, as soon as I post this for my show, but I can't remember the farging term right now. So the EU people are saying Russia is adapting, but this adaptation is costing them. It's expensive. Russians are going to tell you, well, not really, because we're still selling tons. I mean, we're still selling the vast majority of our stuff at full market price. You idiots are cocking up the market, and we're benefiting from it. We're benefiting from that everywhere else in the world. So since we have so much, we will take our cumulative and put it out to you at the cheaper price, because it doesn't really matter to us. That's our reserve dollar. That's our money that's coming out. And, you know, we'll take it because we have so much and you need it. You're going to pay for it anyway. And eventually the market's going to go back and you're going to have screwed yourself so bad that we're going to get it. That's the analysis. Europe is ritualistically sanctioning itself into dependence on other people, deindustrialization, strategic irrelevance. They're becoming less and less relevant. Meanwhile, the opposite is occurring in Russia, China, India, and even Iran, and the other people who are building these alternate systems. There is a market effect to people like, you know, people in putting these sanctions. There's a market effect. But the effect is, long-term, they're building alternate systems, leaving your market and facing other things. But they'll still sell to you. They'll still sell to you, but their focus is elsewhere. And they are learning that we must have our own system, just like Vladimir Vladimirovich, just like Mr. Bezrukov, just like Scott Ritter, and everybody who was speaking at the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum recognizes. Economics is going to bring market prices wherever there's a need for the product, regardless of what EU flunkies like Ursula von der Leyen and Kaya Kallas want to occur. Marco Rubio's of the world, too. You know, war, not helpful. Sanctions, not helpful at all. The market is what's helpful. And everybody is talking about building their own market that won't be subject to Western-based sanctions, alternate systems, and all of that stuff. Repeatedly, these sanction objectors are saying that, and watching, we're all watching it in real time. Sanctions have boomeranged against Europe. European governments are hurting their own economies. But they're not isolating Russia like they think they are, or Iran, or China, or India. They're forcing them together. They're forcing the growth of BRICS and of alternate markets. They're forcing other people that are allies of the EU, of the United States, to go, you know, one day they're not going to like us very much either. I mean, you think Turkey's watching this with great anticipation, saying, geez, we really want to sanction Russia? No, they're a good trade partner with Turkey, Iran. I mean, I'm sorry, with Iran, with Russia, with Azerbaijan, with everybody in the area. They're on the south part of the Black Sea, for God's sake. You know, this is big time trade, and they're not going to go away because you don't get to change your neighbor. You know, your neighbor's still going to be there in 100 years, unless you slaughter him. You know, they're still going to be there. Slovak Prime Minister Robert Fico claims that the EU is only hurting itself, and Russian sanctions, reportedly investment, Kirill Dmitriev, his argument is that energy sanction exposed many, many strategic blunders and it became very evident when oil prices rose, and that's what caused the need for sanctions package 21, right? So it's lunacy. The 21st sanctions package is not proof that Europe has Russia cornered. I mean, if they were cornered, they'd have been cornered with the first sanctions package, right? It's proof, in my view, that the sanctions war is more or less only permanent bureaucracy. Every new package is advertised as an escalation, but most of the new measures are really attempts to plug holes created or recognized based on the last packages. Russia is paying a price, to be sure, but Europe is also paying a huge price. And by the way, the rest of the world is learning at the same time how to live outside of Western-controlled systems. So, you know, I naturally target government overreach. I just don't like it, you know, and I don't like this government overreach any more than I like the overreach of a creative lawyer creating a definition that isn't accurate, which is the Attorney General for the state of Missouri creating her own definition or claiming that a judgment created a definition when it didn't. and just using it as a club to beat people over the head with. I don't like that. If you want to, elect the next governor, that's usually the step, you know, just like a prosecutor becomes a judge, this attorney generals often run for governor. That's what I see. You know, if you want a governor who's willing to beat up on small business, you know, minority owned, take on the bureaucrat that'll create their own definitions. You know, that's not anything other than government brutality. That's what it is. And I object, you know, I don't like that kind of thing. And I don't mind speaking out about it, you know, and I'd be happy to convince me I'm wrong. Please say, tell me I'm wrong. Tell me why, you know, I'm right. So, and trust me, it's what you're doing is not helpful. Targeting businesses, targeting individual people, you know, after you're going to cooperate with them and then you're going to target them. You're going to take action. You're going to destroy a business that takes a lifetime to develop, or not just a business, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of such businesses. You know, not everybody owns 40 convenience stores that you get to attack one, the other 40 fall in line. You own one. You know, you buy one, you work it, you live it day and night. You know, you're selling your corn nuts and your packages and your alcohol, and you have games in there and anything you can do to make that business more profitable. And these people tear it down without a second thought. This is government overreach. This is abuse. They don't even think about you. They don't care about you. They don't think about you. And if they can create a propaganda thing based upon you, that's exactly what they're going to do. Because power is what is necessary for these type of people. And I don't like it. You don't want to be a governing administrator? Great. Follow the law. You know, follow what you know, treat everybody the same. Don't pick and choose. You know, I'm going to go after this guy, not that guy. That's nonsense. And legislature, pull your heads out of your rear ends and do something. Tomorrow, I'm going to talk extensively about this. I've written an article. It's out on civicoutlaws.com. You can go out to the blog page and get my latest article, Who's Really in Charge in Jefferson City? And I think it's a good, you know, it's a good read. I tried to, you know, I practiced law for many years, and I have my own personal story about that that I'd love to go through with you as well, because that's a corrupt pile of crap too. And the way these people are taking the government and using it as a club against people, I'm against, and I'm happy to speak up about it. And tomorrow, Civic Outlaws program starts at 7 a.m., goes till 8:30 a.m. And I've got some information to share, some discussion on the topic, some of the efforts that we are engaging in and taking, specifically related to these so-called, they're not so-called, but VLT machines, gaming machines, and the inaction of the state in fixing this problem and creating regulatory nightmare land, very equal to the sanctions we've been discussing here. Bureaucrats doing what bureaucrats do. Kaya Kallas, Ursula von der Leyen, they're bureaucrats. Kristen Templeton, Catherine Hanaway, they are ultimate bureaucrats. And bureaucrats do what bureaucrats do. That's it. You know, you don't get to control that. And tomorrow we're going to be talking about that pretty much exclusively. Hope to have some information for you. Thank you for listening to International Flavor today. We're on Monday through Thursday, 7:30 to 9 a.m. Civic Outlaws is on Friday here at damradio.com/live. I hope you have a fantastical Mid-Missouri day. Thanks for joining me.